Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Black don't crack. We've heard it. We've said it. We all know what it means. Black folks always seem to look younger than their actual age. But the author of a new book is trying to add new meaning to the phrase, offering positive motivation in the wake of life's trials and tribulations. My guests are Deborah Hubbard, author of Unbreakable, Redefining Resilience, and Siobhan Odom, licensed mental health therapist. Lines are open if you want to join this conversation, and I know you do. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can certainly tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Deborah, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. Siobhan, good to see you again.
Hi.
Mm-hmm. Boy, I tell you, it's going to be a mess. Siobhan is here, right? But first of all, okay, Deborah, I got a problem here.
Okay, let's talk about your problems.
We're going to talk about your problems. Okay. How are you going to come in here and redefine Black Don't Crack? I mean, how can you do that?
Well, you know what? Okay, first of all, redefining Black Don't Crack is one thing, but on that book, it says redefining resilience. Mm-hmm. But my brand is Black Don't Crack. I had the federal trademark on that. But redefining resilience, I think every person, you know, man, woman, child, everybody goes through adversities in their lives. And there's a point where you have to make a choice of which way you're going to go. And for me, it was a divorce. I had to reinvent myself and start all over again. And it was some tough knocks, and you'll read that in my book. But with those tough knocks, I had to make a decision, and I thought about Black Don't Crack, and I thought about the title Unbreakable, and they're synonymous. They're hand in hand. Well, we all know that Black Don't Crack means what? Looking good for your age, the melanin. And, you know, that's true. Scientifically, we don't crack, you know, with the wrinkles. But I wanted to take it further and deeper and talk about how we don't crack physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally. Because the things that I had to deal with, I actually had to redefine resilience.
Well, let me ask you about that, because, you know, based on, you know, what the book suggests, that in going through this redefining of yourself, you did crack, but you put yourself back together again.
Well, I don't admit to cracking. Mm-hmm. I always say that I was bent. I was hella bent, as a matter of fact, but I wasn't broken. Uh-huh. I got to that point where I was at the crux, and we were talking about this earlier, that, you know, it's almost like a thin line between sane and sanity and being insane. And at, you know, dealing with financial deprivation to trying to be a single parent, trying to be an entrepreneur, I had a lot on my plate. And that's life, you know, and you got to deal with the hand that you're dealt in life. But for me, it was like I wanted to redefine resilience in that way. As far as Black Don't Crack was concerned, I wanted it to be inclusive for everybody. I wanted it to be about us celebrating overcoming adversities. Because, you know, we always complain about everything, but what do we celebrate? You know, so, and I had some serious milestones in my life that, you know, that I had to overcome that that made me not quit. So for me, quitting wasn't an option because I think about my bloodline and my parents and their parents and their parents' parents. So I have that legacy in my bloodline. So I refused to quit.
But what makes you different? Because everybody has a story.
Yes.
And you said financial deprivation. You spoke about going through a difficult divorce,
yes.
Emotional abuse, and other forms. But then you just said that's life. What makes this different?
Well, what made it different for me is, like I said, I'm a very tenacious person, and ever since I was a little girl, like I said, my mother, she passed the baton to me. And so it was in my bloodline. But what was different about me, and I think the difference between other people, is I didn't look at it as a choice, that I had a choice. I just knew that I had to do it. And I just made up my mind that I had to do it. Everybody doesn't do that. I'm sure you can speak on that for sure. But I just knew that what my path was, I knew what my journey was. And even my lowest points that pushed me, my stepping stones were my, you know, it led me to my success. And, you know, having a brand that you, people, basically it's global now. People all over the world, they're wearing my brand and they're celebrating. And when they wear that shirt, they're like, yeah, I look good for my age, but it's beyond that. It's about resilience and celebrating that.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking with Deborah Hubbard about her new book, Unbreakable, Redefining Resilience. Also, of course, Siobhan Odom, who is a great, great mental health therapist, and I need to bring her in on this conversation. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Siobhan, I'm sure that in your practice you see quite a bit of resilience and those who indeed find it difficult to be resilient. How would you define resilience, a working definition?
Resilience is pretty much the coping skills that we use to help keep ourselves emotionally grounded. So it's the same or similar set of behaviors that we use no matter what the situation is. So for example, some skills of resilience might be grounding exercises or meditation. I see a lot of people talking about the practice of mindfulness lately. And those are also skills of resilience. Studies show that people that use skills of resilience like meditation and mindfulness actually minimize their rates of being able of getting diagnosed with a mental health disorder.
Mm-hmm. But from what it sounds like, as it relates to what Deborah is doing, mm-hmm. she said she didn't have a choice. And you correct me if I'm wrong. Did you have time for mindfulness? It sounds like it was
Actually, I did.
Okay,
I definitely talk about that in my book because, you know, everybody has different vices. And for me, it was, you know, I used to run. Mm-hmm. I was a runner. So, you know, that ease my pain. Other people, they're into yoga or, you know, meditation, whatever it is that's going to, you know, resonate with you and to help you cross that path. But, you know, you just can't say that everything works for everybody. Yes. Everybody has to find their own way.
But you wouldn't necessarily call those vices. I would say that those were strengthening things.
Well, for some people,
is it for some people?
Yes. Like I actually have had clients in the past that have had marital issues, and they're just like, "Oh, honey, I'm working out, and oh, I'm running," to the point where they're running away from home, they're running down to the next door, they're running to the point where they realize that when I'm running, nobody can talk to me when I'm running, right? Nobody can access me when I'm running, so I'm going to join a runner's club, right? And then the runner's club has their own social activity. So sometimes,
that's exactly what I did.
But see,
that's exactly what I did.
I'm lost because it sounds to me like you're talking about self-care.
Ooh.
And so if you have a problem and if you're having a bad marriage, which you say in the book you came out of a bad marriage, and you're running, you may be running to self-care. You may be running to a greater awareness.
I think a lot of it has to do with peace of mind. Mm-hmm. And for me, because I wore so many hats. Like I said, I was a mother. I was an entrepreneur. I'm starting a new business. Here I am trying to reinvent myself when I was bent, but not broken. So you can say that, but, you know, for me, like that runner's group that you were talking about, like I couldn't survive without that runner's group. You know, every week I was running, and I got up to like 12 miles. I was going to run a marathon, and I got injured. But I got up to like 12 miles a day that I was running, and it just, every day, it healed me more. Okay, so let's just say self-care.
Self-care is activities that are definitely nourishing and pouring into yourself, but they're also not compromising your long-term goals, your everyday life, your abilities to be able to work and make income. Long term. So I feel that people use self-care so very freely today, and they're not really participating in activities that are self-care. So I just wanted to make sure that I put that out there, because I have met people that have been like, oh, I took like 14 days off of work because I was taking self-care time, and I do this like every month because I have that much leave.
Yeah. It's one thing to run to free oneself. It's another thing when you run obsessively to the point of addiction.
Yeah.
And there we go.
Yes.
I can get my counseling degree now. Let me go to the 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. David, calling from Alexandria. David, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call. It's a great subject.
Go right ahead.
I just wanted to ask a question. How does, in your opinion, when it comes to resilience, how does mindset play into that? And do you think it's possible to manage your mindset in a positive way?
No, you.
Okay, mindset for me. Well, first of all, mindset is everything. Because mentally, if you are more balanced and stable, I feel like you're stronger. And resilience, I have this one chapter in my book. It's the bond between melanin and resilience. And there's a lot of similarities, which is really, really deep. But for me, just knowing that I had that strength, that inner strength, to fight, I think that is what is going to make you possibly just get over it all. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. David, thank you so much for your phone call. Before I go back to the phones, you have a book signing tomorrow. Where and when is that for people who are interested in connecting with you?
We're at the Savor Bowie Festival in Bowie, Maryland, at the Town Center Mall. And it starts at 11 o'clock until 6 p.m.
You're going to be signing for 6 hours?
Yes, I'm going to be there. And it's going to be Saturday and Sunday.
Wow. Talk about marathon running.
But we also are selling Black Don't Crack merchandise.
Okay. Apparel. Well, there you go. And it doesn't.
We'll take that.
It most certainly doesn't. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to Deborah Hubbard, author of Unbreakable, Redefining Resilience, and Siobhan Odom, licensed mental health therapist. We're talking about moving beyond your trials and tribulations and doing it, I guess, as Deborah might say, with a little bit of style and swag, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, you can use that. we're going to take a little bit of a break. D calling from Falls Church. When we come back, we're going to talk to you. And as I said, lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM Channel 141 in about 15 seconds. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about motivating yourself after severe life trials. My guests are Deborah Hubbard, author of Unbreakable, Redefining Resilience, and Siobhan Odom, licensed mental health therapist. Lines are open at 202 219-7810-202-319-7810. D calling from Falls Church. D, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi.
I just find that this is just very fascinating because initially I thought, oh yeah, black don't crack. That's how it works. We look good for our age, et cetera. But I was also thinking there is a correlation between, you know, your tribulations in life and really how you age and how you look, and it all seems to come together. I was just saying that on my mom's side of the family, they're very well put together, but they have, you know, they have had like a much easier life, and they seem to like have themselves together, and they're together financially, and they're very loving, and you know, and you could see, like, even though like my oldest aunt is like 83, she looks like she's just hit 60. But if I look on my dad's side of the family, they're very rural. You know, it's just a lot less homogeneous family. They're not as well connected, and they're poor, and you could see the age coming out just a little bit more. Even though they still look okay, you know, it's just, you can see the pain, you can see a lot of the problems, the financial stress.
Well, I'd like to have Deborah react to that, and if I can put a finer point on it, because one of the things, Deborah, is that with that adage of the physical black don't crack, but when you have life's trials and tribulations, you may look good on the outside, but how do you prevent yourself from cracking or even, as you say, severely bending on the inside?
Well, you know, as far as the stress, stress will definitely age you. You know, we all have pressures in life, and like on any given day, you know, you get up in the morning and your day starts out wonderful. By the end of the day, you lose an aunt or an uncle or your brother or your sister, and you're dealing with that stress and that pain of it. But it's, you know, it's how we manage it. For me, when I came up with this whole concept of this brand, I just wanted everyone to receive it from a whole different perspective, not just concentrating on the melanin or, you know, the forever youthful skin or looking good for your age, because that kind of comes with the territory. But I wanted it to be a much deeper, in-depth message. That's why I connected it with resilience, persevering. And that's what I talk. I don't talk about it. I be about it. I'm being about it. And I just think that a lot of times in life, there's so many different things that, you know, it's just thrown our way. But yet there's a lot of different ways that we can say, okay, this is going to make me resilient because now I'm redirecting my path and now I'm going to do this. So I think it's a choice.
Siobhan, why are some people more resilient than others? If you had five people who had the same kind of trials and tribulations, physical abuse, emotional abuse, family tragedy, and the like, but each one of them would handle it differently, why are some people more resilient than others?
I love that question. One, some of us are more genetically predisposed to depression and anxiety and bipolar disorder. Two, what may be traumatic for you may not be traumatic for me. We see this a lot with emergency first responders, people that are subjected to multiple traumas in a week, and they still get up and they go to work each day. Some of those individuals end up becoming severely traumatized by something called vicarious trauma or secondary trauma. And they cope with their trauma by substance use or gambling or some pretty unhealthy coping skills. So also sometimes it can also be the environment. There's something called social learning theory. So a lot of times we learn how to cope with stress by how we've observed people in our family and our communities coping with stress. And so we adapt that into what we understand is our, quote, normal coping skills. Or sometimes we just chalk it up to, quote, the culture.
Interesting. Dee, thank you so much for your question. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Alan calling from Chicago. Thanks for calling, Alan. What's on your mind?
Harold, my noob, how you doing, brother?
Hey, man, how are you? Good to talk to you again.
Always good to talk to you, brother. I love our topic. I just wanted to call in because we veered off for a second and then talked about running groups. Now I wanted to.
Yeah, Alan, my frat brother, has lost a great deal of weight. He looks good. But you found a way to deal with your own personal stresses through running, physical and otherwise.
Absolutely. And I want to say, you know, running groups are fantastic. They're supportive. I'm not going to say that they don't have their pitfalls, for sure, with anything. And you talked about some of that earlier, because some people can veer off in the wrong direction. They can obsess in it. And I think that, you know, it's good to have those hobbies. I run and do yoga and do a lot of other things. And if without the right amount of balance, some people fall off of their spiritual self, and some might even, you know, not necessarily take care of their personal items. You know, they might replace one family with another and say, oh, I've got these running people, they're great, and I'm going to replace them. But, you know, and by and large, I mean, I think there's some benefits to that or whatever you do in order to balance out your life. So, you know, if running or whatever you do in order to, you know, some people use it as an escape. I think most people use it as trying to take care of themselves, spiritually, mentally, however it is, and try to supplement that. But not necessarily place those other important things.
Well, as a black man in Chicago, just be careful where you're running.
Absolutely. Okay. You said it, not me.
You know, jog, don't run, Alan. Alan, thank you so much, man. Take care. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tony, calling from Capitol Heights. Tony, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. The question I had was, how do you distinguish between, I know we as people of color were and still are spiritual people, and most of our, we balance that by handling stress through our spirituality. Do you think that because we have assimilated into this culture, that we have more stresses that are equated to assimilating to here in the United States?
That sounds like two questions. One, whether or not cultural assimilation has created more stress and what part spirituality plays in dealing with that. I'll let you start with that, Deborah.
Well, for me, spirituality, my spirituality, if it wasn't for my spirituality, God, I would not be here today. So I want to first start and say that. But you know what? If you think about us as black people, African Americans, and you look at our culture and, you know, our history, and you look at slavery and civil rights and just everything that we've gone through, and just look at the resilience there. I mean, you know, I was thinking about like, when we were being hung and nooses around our necks, and the women, they still had to carry on and, you know, and be mothers and, you know, just carry on their lives. So I just think that spirituality is definitely the key for me. It has been the key for me. It has given me a foundation of security. So, and I think a lot of people, they, you know, use that as an outlet to stay resilient.
Siobhan.
I like how, excuse me, I like how you had asked about spirituality, and I think sometimes we confuse spirituality with being religious. You can be spiritual without being religious. Spirituality is a form of self-care that is recognized. I believe the University of Buffalo School of Social Work has this great website where they talk about how you can incorporate spirituality as one of the seven dimensions for self-care to help reduce your stress. Some people do rely on their religious faith to help reduce stress. One, because it provides community. Community also mm-hmm. provides support and fellowship. So, yes. And also, how you mismanage assimilation into situations can cause stress, because big discussions going out right now is there's this graphic going about the black woman when she enters into the white workforce and the stress that comes along with that, and how due to lack of support sometimes can trigger some women of color to cope with that stress in unhealthy ways.
Okay. Thank you so much, Tony, for your phone call. Monique calling from Maryland. Monique, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. How are you this evening?
Good.
Wonderful.
Good. Great, great, great. I kind of came in on the tail end of the conversation, and I was listening to the sister when she was talking about how when you exercise and it grounds you, and I remember for me, like when we were younger, you knew people had mental problems, but you basically used what was around in the universe. Like you ran, or you actually, like she said, it was a vice for me. Running was a vice. I rode my bicycle. It was a vice. And I realized, like right here, right now, at an older age, I'm not exercising as much as I used to. And I came from a failed relationship, and I came from like death in the family, and it's harder for me to cope. And I realized that when I was running, it actually gave me good endorphins. Not saying to disqualify somebody who helps you with mental health, but that was the tool. It really was a tool to get over any anguish, any kind of hurt, any kind of pain that you were going through.
Would you agree with that, Siobhan?
Yes, that's actually perfect. What you described was, again, the perfect way in which we would use running. But to clarify, we're just talking about people that they're using running as a way to, like, run away from home for, like, 5 hours a day, every day. Then they're joining running clubs. They're gone every weekend. They're not with their kids. They're not with their spouse. They're like, not going to work because they're, quote, running.
Well, let's take exercise out of it and talk about more generally. A lot of people, arguably women, for example, although it would apply to men too, I'm sure. Don't give me that look, Siobhan.
We're both giving you that look.
Yes. Okay.
Side eye, put your finger down. that people have a tendency to replace pain with the busy. They get busy and on purpose. And that busy, getting busy, isn't always necessarily productive. It may not necessarily be a vice. It may not necessarily be something that is detrimental to one's health. It's just that they find things to do to avoid addressing the problem. Is that a better example as opposed to just saying folks just start running and exercising? Yeah.
That's the perfect example and definition of what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do about that?
Well, one of the first things that I like to ask people is the person ready to begin to confront their issues? Right? Because in order to confront those issues, you have to be in a place of readiness. So, my approach would be to that. But then if somebody is ready to confront those issues, I would really ask them, like, what are you scared of happening by opening up and addressing these issues? How can this help your life? And how can this hinder your life by addressing your issues?
Is it hard to do that?
Oh, gosh, it's scary, Harold.
Why do you say that?
Oh, it's scary. Because one, for some people, now that I talk about it, some people are like, I got to do something about it. It means I'm going to have some hard conversations. I'm going to have to cut some people out of my life.
Nah, I'm not going to do that yet. Yeah, I'm not going to have that hard conversation yet. I'm not ready to cut them out yet, even though they should.
That's real.
I need to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk to Deborah about the redefining of herself, that dark place, the hard place, those hard conversations that you had with yourself and how you made those changes. Monique, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to the Daily Drama on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about motivating yourself after severe life trials. So, Deborah, what was that dark moment, that the watershed moment in your life when you were going through this process? What happened?
You know what? I think, well, you know, I talk about the destruction of my family. I'm from a large family, 8 girls, 3 boys. I'm the youngest girl.
Wow.
And my mother, honestly, she really did pass that baton to us, as far as resilience. But, you know, when you're stuck in it, it's a whole different, avenue, ball game. And I just remember one specific thing that almost broke me. And that was, you know, I mean, I was accustomed to a really nice lifestyle. I couldn't feed my kids. I didn't have a job. And, it got to the point where I had to apply for welfare. And I'll never forget that, because that day, I think I had a nervous breakdown, or I was on the verge of having a nervous breakdown. And a lot of my friends, they don't know this. My kids, they're going to read this in my book for the first time. And to be gut honest and vulnerable about the pain in your life, it heals people, and other people to know that the same thing resonates with them that I have actually gone through. But here I was, pulling up to the welfare line, the office, in a Hummer. And I drive up in my car. And it's not that, you know, it was a Hummer, quote unquote, but it was my lifestyle, and it was just snatched from beneath me. And I had to really think about that at that point. Like, you know, that doesn't define who you are. You know what I mean? And I had to dig deep. And I had to say that I'm better than this. And I had to temporarily use that. And so for me, it was welfare. But for somebody else, it could be drugs. For somebody else, it could be breast cancer. You know, everybody has their adversities that they go through. But for me to be able to soar past that, to say that I am resilient, you know, it just gave me that backbone to stand up straight. And now I feel like I can conquer the world. I feel like I can do anything.
But I would think, you just said you come from a family of 11.
Yes.
The first thing that I would think is, did you not have the support of your family where you weren't going
to?
Well,
you know what? You have your family support, mm-hmm. but I'm a very independent person, even though I'm the youngest daughter.
Or is it pride? Youngest,
yeah. Well, it was pride, but more than anything, it was like we always had this, well, it is self-pride, definitely, but I didn't want the handouts all the time. And trust me, my sisters were there for me, my family, they were there for me, thick or thin. But at one point, it was like I had to pull my own bootstraps up, and I had to say, you know what, you got to do this. You have to fight for this. And I did. So, I mean, it was tough. It wasn't an easy battle, but, you know, and then I had children, so I could not fail them. But more than that, I didn't want to fail myself.
Mm-hmm. What's the turnaround point in your mind, Siobhan, when you hear this, this story?
When you say turnaround point?
For her, what do you think mentally, emotionally, is the point where some people fly and others fall? I mean, is there some kind of mental device that is used? Because like you said, you pulled up at the welfare office, but you didn't walk through the door and all of a sudden money rained down on you. This was a process.
Yes, it was.
It's so interesting that you asked that, because you were telling your experience, and there were so many different thoughts that were going on in my mind. Like, what stuck out to me was that you came from this large family, and you were like, nope, not going to tell anybody what I'm going through. I'm going to keep this to myself. And because I wonder if we were to go back to you at that time and we were to ask you, well, what could be the worst thing that would happen if you said to a family member, hey, I'm not doing okay. Hey, I might need some help, right? And the reason why I ask that question is because many a times individuals, by the time they get to me, it's because they haven't asked anybody for help. And then there's people that are there that are like, oh my gosh, if I only knew. So I kind of just wonder, like, that was one of the questions that was going on in my mind, which was like, what was the function of...
It's not that I didn't tell my family. They knew. But the process took longer than I thought. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to keep going and to them on and on and on, but they knew. They knew my issues. They knew my pain. You know, I wore my pain because I got down to like 110 pounds. You know, it just wasn't easy, but they definitely knew, and it wasn't to the point that I had pride that I wouldn't expose it. And that's what I do in my book. I talk about, like I said, my vulnerabilities. I talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. But just getting to that point where I knew that it was about me and me making that decision to make that crossover.
I guess my other thing too is kind of like, for some of the listeners that are on that are listening that are on public assistance themselves, right? Like, how would you get them to connect to that experience?
Well, you know what? It's public assistance is not a bad thing, and I'm not saying it from that aspect. Mm-hmm. But for me, because I did have pride and because I did have a certain lifestyle, it wasn't welcoming for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt embarrassed. I felt hurt. I felt like, you know, first of all, my parents, their marriage was death to them part till they parted, till they passed away. So I felt like even that, you know, it was a combination of things.
You
for
felt
me.
Like a failure in your marriage.
Yeah, I felt like it was a failure because it didn't work. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a plan B. Mm-hmm. I only had plan A because I was going for the win. But getting back to the applying for public assistance, I would tell everybody, because that's what is there to assist you.
Yeah.
But, you know, then you have people that rape the system and they abuse it. But, you know, I did it until I needed it. And then after that, thank God, Black Don't Crack came about. And after that, I didn't look back.
Because you just answered that question, which was, what would you have said in that time? If I were to ask you, like, hey, what are you really feeling internally? Which was, you just said it. So I think you were sharing that.
Yes, you're welcome.
So what was the moment when you realized that all of it was over and that the second part of your life was beginning?
Well, you know, a lot of it was, the crux was divorce, and it was a matter of me forgiving. It was a matter of me forgiving for all the wrongs that somebody did to me, that I did to somebody else. And once I got to that point where I was honest, it's like the pain started ceasing. It's like I just started shedding, you know, all of that stress and pain behind, and I put it behind me. And until I got to that point, and you know, some people never get to that point because they want to live in that pain and wallow in it, like my mama used to say. And I made my mind up that wasn't going to be my life. And I knew that I had a legacy of resilience and unbreakable and Black Don't Crack. And it was a matter of me to make that decision just to move on with it.
Mm-hmm. Final thoughts, because I only have a couple of minutes left. Some final thoughts from you, Siobhan.
I think that resilience is definitely a lifestyle. Recovery is a lifestyle. Happiness is a lifestyle. And so that's what I'm hearing you say to the listeners, is that this is a lifestyle, that it's something that is never ending in terms of working on it. So I definitely strongly encourage all the listeners to do that. And I definitely thank the listener that tuned in and said, hey, I really recognize that I stopped using some really healthy coping skills like running to keep me resilient and keep me moving forward. And those are pretty much my thoughts. And don't be afraid to see a licensed mental health therapist if you need to.
There you go. Your final thoughts, Deborah.
Yeah, and that's one thing too that I did do. You know, I didn't have that much pride, and that therapist, you know, it helped me move on. And, you know, that's why I got to the point where I wanted to share my story to help other people heal, and that's why I wrote Unbreakable. And Unbreakable is available on blackdon'tcrack.com. And this weekend, if you're in the Virginia area, D.C., Maryland, come on out to the Savor Buoy Festival. It's from 11 until 6 o'clock Saturday and Sunday.
And she's going to be there from noon to 6.
I'm going to sign in so I get finger cramps.
Right, exactly.
So come and get my book.
There you go. Deborah Hubbard and Siobhan Odom, thank you both for talking to us. I appreciate
it. Thank you so much for having us.
That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141, for this Friday, April 12th. For News Director Renee Nash, reporters Taylor Thomas, Millette Green, Bramante Bryant, producer Candace Atkins, and engineer Bobby Adams, I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night, and have a wonderful weekend.